Hey everyone, welcome back to the All Things Gymnastics Podcast. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Brittany.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things gymnastics. And this week we are so excited to bring you a conversation that we've been looking forward to having for a while now. Usually when we do interviews, it's really focused on the here and now, and we don't always get to dive deeper into what it's actually like being a college athlete and what it's like walking away from a sport that you've done your whole entire life. So we figured now would be a good time with season and some careers coming to an end very soon to explore some of those topics a little bit more. Today's guest is our good friend Abby Brenner, who is a former gymnast at the University of Michigan and the University of Utah. During her athletic career, Abby truly did it all, from helping Michigan win its first ever national title in 2021 and winning two Big Ten championship titles as a team. Then she transferred to Utah for her fifth year, where she helped Utah win the Pac-12 championship as a team and took home the individual Pac-12 vault title. Abby closed out her career by winning NCAA All-American honors on the uneven bars and helped Utah to finish third at the NCAA championships. In this episode, Abby will talk about the misconceptions that sometimes surround transfer athletes, how the transfer process works, the challenges that come with being a D1 gymnast, areas she has struggled with post-gymnastics, NIL, and so much more. So please welcome to the show, Abby Brenner. Today, we are super excited to be joined by a very special guest, 2021 NCAA champion and 2023 Pac-12 vault champion, Abby Brenner. Thank you for joining us.
I'm so excited to be back.
This is your third time on the podcast.
Is it really three?
Yeah. The first time it was you and Bev. And then
gosh, that's right.
Second time it was just you when you transferred.
Yep. I remember that. I forgot with Bev.
Yeah. As soon as you transferred and we had you on, you said something about like it was your first time on the podcast. And I was like, she must have forgot the first time. But it's okay.
Well, you guys have grown so much, I feel like, since then.
And yeah. It's been so long, too. Like, we've been literally doing this for 4 years. So
yeah. And that was, like, in the beginning, because I was going into my senior year that time.
Yeah. It was before COVID? No, it was after. No. Was it? Okay. See, I don't even remember.
It was, like, the first official season post-COVID.
Yeah. It was the year that you guys won. It was 2021. Mm-hmm. Going into that year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Got it. Glad we got that settled. Okay. Well, anyways.
Now we can move on.
This is going to be just like a little fun post-gymnastics life update. So it's going to be covering a bunch of topics. So we're going to talk about retirement, transferring, sports culture, NIL, all that good stuff. So I think we have to start with the life update. What have you been up to in the year now that you've been retired from gymnastics?
Yes. So I am still working at the University of Utah with their MMR team. So their media rights team, their corporate sponsors. So I work on the fulfillment side of that. So any type of promotion or signage piece, you know, the Allstate kick or grab a grand, things like that, that happen during any sporting event. I'm in charge of making that fulfillment. Well, not me personally. I have a team that I work with. So still closely related to sports and the athletic department, which has been so fun. And, you know, that's exactly what I wanted to get into, is like the business side of sports.
Yeah.
So it's been like really, really eye-opening, a lot of learning. It's been so fun. It's been great, honestly.
So now, did you graduate with your master's? I'm still confused because you never actually like posted anything. So I'm like, did you graduate?
Yeah. So I finished all my classes, but this semester I've been working on my thesis.
Oh.
And so my thesis is on the perceptions of equity in NIL and whether NIL legislation should uphold and have a relationship with Title IX, whether equity should be a piece involved in that. And so the perceptions of the major stakeholders that are involved. So I've been interviewing coaches, athletes, collectives, like the collective operators and admins that are involved, and just understanding what that would look like, whether equity is a piece to be applied, and yeah, what are the major stakeholders' feelings on that.
I feel like that's right up your alley. That's like exactly what you've been passionate about.
No, quite literally. It's been so interesting learning just like the different roles and aspects and like different perspectives. Like collective operators definitely have a more business side perspective on it. You know, they're the ones fundraising and giving the money out to athletes. And so theirs is more like business driven, versus coaches and admin are much more, you know, opportunity given, protecting the athletes driven. And then athletes obviously are the ones doing it. And so their their perspective is so unique on the other side of it. And so it's been really interesting to just hear the experiences that they had with NILs and with collectives and kind of just dissecting it.
Yeah. I have a real quick side comment. Well, not comment, but question about the Red Rocks, the Who Rocks the House Collective. Mm-hmm. Who runs that? Is it like former athletes? Like, is it just one person? Is it a group of people?
It's a group of people. So it's a lot of super fans and alumni that are a part of it. And then some of the donors from the University of Utah, like donor list, they're a part of it. But a lot of them are just like main super fans who turned into donors, or donors who turned into super fans, and then alumni. So like the head of it, or one of the head, is Kim, and she was a former Red Rock herself. Okay. Among a million other hats that she wears, she's a mother, on top of has a master's and a doctorate in public health, on top of doing her own businesses and running the collective. She is incredible. She's on my board for my thesis. So she's amazing.
She does it all, it sounds like.
Yeah, she does it all, for real.
So how difficult was the transition into the retirement phase of your life? Because you do this one thing for like 20 plus years, and then all of a sudden it just stops. So mm-hmm. How do you cope with that? And how difficult was that for you? Or easy? Maybe it was easy for you.
Yeah, I feel like the fifth year definitely made it super easy, especially with my decision to come to Utah being not just gymnastics focused, but professionally focused. I knew where I wanted to go into sports business of some sort, especially within marketing. And so coming here and knowing that was kind of my next step, I feel like I used the year to network a lot and have that kind of in my mindset, which helped transition that way, at least. I think the hardest part is no one tells you how tough a 5-hour workday is going to be. Yeah. It's so long.
Yeah.
Just sitting at your desk and like, I don't know. I just feel like when it came to gymnastics, it was enjoyable, and not saying that work is not enjoyable, but it's definitely a whole different aspect, and you're using a lot more different mental and brain capacity than I feel like I always was in gymnastics. And so I feel like that was really hard. But the hardest part is definitely missing like the camaraderie of the sport. I miss just being surrounded by all the girls and always just having friends around and going to dinners together and study hall and just being with each other, like those built-in friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But still being a part of the athletic department has made it so easy because I see all those girls. I pop into practice every once in a while. I feel like I've had an easier transition because of all of that, but it definitely has had its challenges.
Mm-hmm. What is it like watching college gymnastics after you're done with it? Is it weird to watch it but then not be doing it yourself?
It's really weird, especially when I work like the home meets and I'm on the floor. It takes all the self-control not to like run out and high five and hug all the girls afterwards. That's been so challenging. But it's more nerve-wracking, to be honest. I feel like since I don't have control over any of their like performances, not that I really had any control, but I felt like I was on the inside knowledge. I knew more and like I was like involved with the team. But now that I feel like I'm not, it's more nerve-wracking. I'm not the inside knowledge, so I don't know what's happening. I don't know like the feelings and the thoughts that are going around. And so I feel like I'm even more emotionally invested watching it than I ever was when I was a gymnast.
You mentioned kind of already like having a job and not necessarily a lot of gymnasts, because they're spending so much time in the gym, you're not used to that work environment. And a lot of students are working internships or they have jobs outside of class. Athletes, I feel like, don't really get that experience. So mm-hmm. For you, I guess, first of all, how easy or hard was it for you to get the job that you have? And then what advice would you have for athletes that are going to be graduating soon mm-hmm. on how to, I guess, make their resume more appealing, considering that they might not have some of that work experience or field experience, but you still have a lot of skills that you're gaining from gymnastics.
You have a lot of experiences that are super applicable to the workforce. Absolutely. Yes.
So like, how did you go about shaping your resume and making yourself marketable for a job? Also, I'm Absolutely. Curious, do you put your gymnastics accomplishments on your resume? Like, do you put that you're an NCAA champion?
Yes, I do. So they've shrunk a lot into like multiple, just like small lines now. It used to be like a huge list, but it's now that I have some work experience and internships and stuff, I've added that more and taken away, which was really sad. I remember my dad is my like professional helping guide in everything that he does, my mentor. So I'm so lucky for him. But I remember when he was telling me to like delete some things and like shrink some of it. And I was like, 20 years of hard work for it to be two lines now? Like,
It's like
what?
that Tic Tac sound, all that work and what did it get me?
No, literally. He's like, welcome to it. Pretty soon it'll just say like student athlete. I was like,
No, NCAA champion and Pac-12 vault champion always stays. Always.
I think it'll always stay on there for sure. For sure. But going back to your question, when it comes to, athletes not being able to have those internships and those experiences, that was really hard. But I challenge every athlete, almost every athletic department has career building resources for student athletes. And so Utah has them here. Michigan had a huge one. And that was a huge resource for me. It was hard. I remember them telling me to start like freshman, sophomore year. And I was so not in the mindset. I was like, I'm in college. I don't need to worry about what I'm going to do out of college. But really getting into that junior, senior year is when I really took advantage of those resources. Fortunately for us, gymnastics actually is a great time for an internship in the summer. Like our schedule just pans out that way. So we were super fortunate, but not every athlete, I mean, softball and baseball, they don't get those same experiences and those same opportunities. Same with football, And so I feel like that was super fortunate. I was able to get an internship going into my senior year. I challenge people to find opportunities through those athletic departments that are not the atypical internship. It doesn't have to be a 6 month summer internship that's in office the entire time acting as a job. I mean, there's so many experiences that companies would kill for to have student athletes learn from them. And so I feel like being able to find things and use those resources to find opportunities that do fit in your schedule because they do exist. It just takes a little bit more work, but they're absolutely out there. Another thing was leveraging former alumni. That was a really big thing at the University of Michigan and at the University of Utah with the Red Rocks. Leveraging your alumni because there's just about an alumni in every single industry that you can imagine and that you can find and connect with. Which leads me to my most valuable point to all student athletes is networking. That's honestly how I landed my job here, is just going out, emailing people, asking to connect for 15 to 30 minutes, asking about their job, and following up with who could you recommend me connecting with next. I still do that today, to this day. I'm still connecting, I'm still networking. It is probably the most valuable lesson and the most valuable skill to have. And athletes are very good at it. I mean, we're interacting with people all the time. And so I feel like that is the most valuable advice is reach out, network, communicate with people, and find those opportunities and those resources, but and just learn. You can never stop learning from people. And so I feel like my most important advice to athletes is network.
I think people really underestimate how important networking is, especially when you're trying to get a job. I feel like that's how a lot of people actually get the jobs that they have. It's
No,
by knowing people
literally.
or knowing someone that knows someone.
Absolutely. It's about knowing people. And I feel like we're always scared to reach out, either to those alumni or to people that we, connected with on LinkedIn that are in positions that we want to go into and industries we want to go into. You're not negging. They want to help people, especially those alumni. They want to help you get to where you want to be, and they're eager and excited to help you. And so I feel like once you get past the why would they want to talk to me, I feel like I'm just going to be nagging them. It provides valuable, valuable knowledge. And it's so amazing. And like I said, they want to help.
So I want to transition into something that a lot of the gymnastics fans are super, super interested in, but I also think it can be helpful for any athletes that are potentially listening to hear your perspective on transferring and the transfer portal. I feel like it's this big mystery, and now people are being a little bit more transparent about it. Like people will announce if they've entered the transfer portal, and it's a little bit more open than it was in the past. But I guess to start, first of all, you transferred from the University of Michigan to the University of Utah. for your fifth year. What were the emotions that went into making that decision? Was it a difficult decision to make? And did you have any fears with entering the transfer portal?
Yes, yes, and yes.
You're like, where do I start?
No, literally, I'm like, I'll start with, you know, the emotions going into it. It was really hard. I feel like the idea of transferring kind of has this negative connotation to it. And I don't feel like it needs to. There's a whole million different reasons for athletes transferring. And I feel like it doesn't have to be a negative reason. For me, like I kind of briefly mentioned, mine was, you know, kind of more of a professional growth opportunity for me. When I signed at 15 years old or committed at 15 years old, I committed for 4 years at the University of Michigan. And at the end of those 4 years, I knew that I gave it my all. I did everything I wanted to do at Michigan, won a national championship, won Big Tens. And I was just very, very fortunate to have another year due to COVID. And so I really wanted, you know, to take that opportunity to learn, to grow professionally as a woman. And so I made a decision to leave. That is literally it. And those are the reasons why. I have a degree from the University of Michigan. I will forever be an alumni to the University of Michigan. I have gone back. There's been open arms. You know, I talk to the girls all the time. I still reach out to the coaches. I'm literally sipping out of a water bottle that Bev gave me.
Sitting in an office on the campus of the University of Utah with a Michigan Yeti.
No, quite literally. And so, you know, I feel like that the negative undertones can kind of override what the real reasons some athletes are transferring for.
Yeah.
And so was it very scary? Absolutely. I didn't know what was going to happen. For me, I was the beginning of it, I feel like. And so it was definitely a lot of apprehension, fear of the unknown, not know what was going to happen. But I could not be more thankful for my opportunities and my my journey. I genuinely do not think I would be the woman I am today had I not gone through those hard conversations of wanting to transfer and the reasonings why. They're not easy by no means, but I feel like after those 4 years, you know, I grew as a woman and I got to make those decisions for myself as a new woman leaving Michigan. And so to me, it was such a good growing experience. And those conversations you're going to have for the rest of your life when you're going to jobs, meeting people, you're going to have those conversations of who you are, what you value, what your value is. And if you're applying for a job and an interview, you have to explain, you know, this is who I am. This is why you should hire me. And so all those types of conversations were in that journey. And so I feel like I've grown so much and learned so much and have such valuable knowledge from it.
Can you kind of explain how the transfer portal works? Because like Ashley said, there's a lot of like mystery surrounding it, especially for us gymnastics fans. Like we obviously know hardly anything about it because we can't see it. But I also think for a lot of athletes too, like there's maybe some level of secrecy or just fear of the unknown with what that process actually looks like. So yeah. I guess first question, when you decided that you were transferring, at what point did you enter the portal? And I know you told us this before, but I genuinely can't remember what you said. So
no, you're good. Yeah. I feel like mine was, like I said, I feel like I was in the beginning of it. And so there was no real path towards when to go in, when not to go in.
Yeah.
And I feel like by saying going into the portal, I feel like it sounds like you're like going into this
big room,
pull out the drawer and you like have all these like files and you're like, oh, I'm inserting my file. It's not like that at all. There's not actually like, I mean, on the athlete end, there is not really like an actual portal that you could see. It's just on the coach's end.
Yeah.
But I decided actually right away to go into the portal. So like I said, I had those conversations with my coach, with Bev and Sherman and Miley and Lexi about, you know, what my next steps were. I wanted to be super transparent with them. I wanted to be honest with them. We had those conversations in the fall going into my senior year because I knew I wanted to take a fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went into the portal around October, November.
So for your whole senior year, you were in the portal.
Yes, my whole senior year.
Now it's coming back to me. Now I remember you saying that.
Yeah.
I think
And
some
I,
athletes, they might make that decision, like now, for example, like season is ending for a lot of teams and people are deciding that maybe they want to transfer. But for some people, it's something that they've been planning to do basically their entire senior year.
Yeah, exactly. And so I did it just so, I didn't know how the coaching world worked. And so I wanted coaches to know that I was thinking about transferring, wanted to transfer. And so they could kind of, keep an eye on me and my performances throughout the year. I did not engage in much conversation when it came to that. My whole point of going in early was just so that people knew, had my name,
Yeah.
and could watch for me. That was the main objective. I didn't start really contacting or having coaches contact me and engaging with coaches until close to postseason.
Do you know, are they allowed to? Like I know there's rules with like recruiting, but like once you're already at a school, can a coach from another school talk to you if you're like if you're signed with Michigan and you're still competing for Michigan, can
Yeah.
other schools talk to you? Do you know
Yeah.
that?
So going back to like what the portal is. So when you go into the portal, you can share my email and phone number and like information, contact information, and share it to coaches, or you can click, I want to reach out and don't share my information. And so you have options of whether coaches are allowed to come contact you, or if you want to do it all yourself, because say you know where you want to go, you want to reach out, you can do that. And so I clicked like coaches are allowed to contact me because that was a fear of mine. I was like, I don't even know if people want me. I don't know what it looks like. I might as well just do it all and see what happens.
Like I'm shooting my shot with everyone.
No, quite literally, I was like, I don't know, like I'll cast my net wide and see what happens.
Now, was that because you were a fifth year? Is that why you were afraid that people weren't going to be interested in you, or was it just
Yeah.
general like insecurity?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a fifth year. Do our colleges looking to recruit fifth years? I'm a little bit older. Does that cause any apprehensions on their end? Do they want new young athletes to come in? Do they even have scholarships? I didn't even know, if coaches are saving scholarships for transfers, like what all that looked like. And so it was just nerve-wracking. And I also, didn't know if I was if coaches wanted me. Going back to that whole recruiting process, it was really scary. But yes, so as soon as you go into the portal, coaches can contact you. And so I did have coaches contact me right away. If they did, I was respectful and just was like, I'm not really making a decision until towards the end of season. Most coaches honestly waited until towards the end of season when they kind of had their situation figured out. They had conversations with their seniors and or they just knew what their scholarship status was going to be by the end of the year. So most of the communication honestly just happened around postseason time. And then from there on, I started setting up visits kind of right after nationals. So a few conversations pre-nationals and then hit the ground running after nationals.
Yes. Do you want to share what schools reached out to you? You don't have to if you don't want to, but I know like the nosy people like myself just love to know those details.
I'll just say I have a lot of schools in the top 25.
As you should. So you were afraid that no one wanted you, but all the schools wanted you, is what you're saying.
Yes, no. I had schools like LSU, Florida, Oklahoma, Utah, Iowa, Minnesota, but I also had connections with Iowa and Minnesota too. With Quest being at Iowa, and then Rich was my old coach growing up in club. So yeah, I was very fortunate to have a lot of opportunities, but I was honestly overwhelmed and blown away with how many opportunities were out there, to be honest. And I feel like athletes should know that there are opportunities out there for you. And so if you really want to do the dang thing, that there's definitely opportunities out there. So do not let yourself be scared.
With an athlete of your caliber, do the lower ranked schools, do they like shoot their shot? Do they try to get you to come to their school? Or like D3 teams like reaching out to you even though
I
they
actually had a lot of acro and tumbling teams reach out to
really
me.
interesting. I think I've heard that before. I forget who it was that told me that, but that like the acro teams will try to recruit
Yes.
gymnasts. It was Avery Knapp. I think Avery Knapp
Avery
said
Knapp.
that. Did yeah, when she
Yeah.
was recruiting.
Absolutely. I had so many reach out to me. Like, do you
That
want to
is
try something new
fun.
for your senior year or for your last year? They have scholarships. So I feel like since they have scholarships, they kind of have something to stand on. That's a bit harder when it comes to like the D2 and D3 schools, is that if athletes are looking for scholarships, they don't necessarily have that to stand on.
But so do like the D1 schools that are lower ranked, do they even bother reaching out to you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, certain athletes might want to go to a nursing program, or I don't know, or their goals are they want to compete more. And so they want to go to a smaller school because they want to feel like they have more involvement in participating in gymnastics and being in lineups, which is awesome. I mean, I feel like we talk about recruiting. Do you want to be a small fish in a big pond or a big fish in a small pond? You know, every athlete is different in what they want and where they feel like they're going to thrive best. And sometimes you think you're going to thrive best in one area and you don't, and you realize that you want to be a part of something different. And so things like that. So maybe that's why. So I feel like lower schools always approach athletes because you never know where their mindset is at and their reasoning for being in the portal.
Well, especially with the fifth years, I feel like these are grad students, not just somebody who's transferring in the middle of their career. So, like, a lot of the times somebody is looking for a specific program, or maybe they want to be closer to a significant other. There's just so many reasons I feel like that someone could choose a particular school, even if it's not just for their gymnastics. You know what I mean?
Agreed. And I feel like that's so cool being a fifth year is you actually have that knowledge about yourself, that you know where you want to go, what best fits you. And I remember going on visits. It was a completely different experience on a visit during my fifth year than on a visit when I was like 14, 15 years old. Just the maturity level, the questions being asked, you know, seeing the facilities was super cool. But, you know, talking to the coaches, talking to administration, that was really important for me that I never would have thought would have been when I was 15 years old. I didn't even know what an athletic director was.
Before, you were probably just being like wooed by like the facilities or things like that, the pretty Leos, but now you're like actually looking at the connections that you're going to be able to make at that place, the education you're going to be able
Absolutely.
to get, factors that are more like important for your long-term success outside of gymnastics, because
Yes.
gymnastics does end.
It does end. It does absolutely. And so, I mean, that was kind of the main point of my entire transfer was gymnastics does end. I want to be in sport business. What better school to go to than the one that has 15,000 fans at a gymnastics meet?
Period. So you mentioned a very common misconception with transferring is that I think a lot of people, probably mainly just gymnastics fans, tend to think of it as a negative thing. Like, ooh, I wonder what happened with so and so. Like, Like, what's the tea they there? must hate that team, or this coach must be awful. People tend to do that. Are there any other common misconceptions you feel like with transferring?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I mean, I feel like that one is probably the biggest one. That is a
I
big one.
feel like that's the biggest one, or the biggest misconception is, oh, they're transferring because, you know, they're not competing as much and they want to compete more, and it's more of a selfish reason, personal gain reason. I feel like that's a huge misconception too when it comes to it, which I talked about, like small fish, big pond, big fish, small pond, you know, and it's not bad. You know, every athlete, every person has their what makes them tick, what makes them thrive, what works best for them. We do it in everyday life. People change jobs all the time because it's a different career field. It's what they're more interested in. Different environment, different location. Like, there's so many reasons, and it's the same thing with girls transferring.
And I feel like this question you kind of already answered, but any advice for somebody who is thinking about transferring, but maybe they feel intimidated by the process, maybe they're worried about what people are going to think, whether that's their family, their teammates, their friends, their fans. What advice would you have for those people who are like kind of on the fence? Like they're like considering it, but they're also like low-key afraid and they need the extra push.
A few things. I think one is don't look at it as a scary thing. Look at it as such an exciting thing. You are making a decision for yourself. You are in your 20s. This is the time to be selfish. Me and my friends talk about that all the time. This is the time to put yourself first. It's so exciting, the opportunities that are out there for you, things that you might absolutely fall in love with. This is your journey. It's no one else's journey. And so embrace it. It's exciting. It's not scary. And I think everyone has that negative connotation that It's a scary, horrible, bad thing. And it does not have to be, and it not necessarily is. Think of it as such a beautiful, exciting, happy time, putting yourself first and making yourself a priority. I think that was one of the biggest things.
And I'm going to add too, I think also just know that you're still going to be supported. Like,
yes.
Like you left Michigan, but I feel like everybody still supported your decision, because at the end of the day, the fan base, former teammates, everybody cares about like you and what you want. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I feel like people are ultimately rooted in wanting the best for other people, usually, maybe not always, but I feel like for the most part that does tend to be true. So I feel like even looking at someone like Savannah Shane here, for example, transferring from LSU to, or sorry, from Georgia.
Nope, she wasn't in Georgia.
Not Georgia.
Florida.
Florida to Florida. LSU.
God. She lived in Georgia, I think.
I know.
She's been there,
I'm like, kind of valid. But anyways, transferring from basically one rival school to another.
Yeah.
And she mentioned like being worried about like what people would think about that and like the fan base and just like, I don't know, kind of it being like an awkward experience. But I feel like ultimately most people are still rooted in a place of wanting to support and genuinely caring about
absolutely
the person and what's best for them.
That's a great point. I feel like the negativity behind it, or the negative comments or things like that, they pass, they go away. And like you said, at the end of the day, when you salute, everyone is there. You have a support system. People want you to be happy. People want you to thrive. And so, like you said, inherently, people want the best for people. And so, although there may be negativity surrounding it for a second, it's going to pass and it'll be okay.
So you have been on a lot of teams that have had the highest of highs, and you've also been on teams that have experienced some lows.
Mm-hmm.
From your perspective, I'm really interested in this. What do you think leads to a team being successful? Is it natural talent? Is it team chemistry? Is it mental toughness? A combo of everything? Like, in your opinion, from what you've experienced and what you've seen, what makes a team successful?
Mm-hmm. I think there's no perfect combination. Does natural talent help for a successful team? Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The most fun years I've had on teams and the most memorable are definitely the best when team culture is the best. I think you just have a lot more fun. Those are the more memorable moments. Winning's great, but you know, laughing and eating candy in your hotel room with your PJs on, or you know, going to a tailgate for a football game, like those are so fun. I feel like those make the most memorable years. I also think a coaching staff that values athletes is probably one of the biggest things for me personally as an athlete. Coaching staff that values everything beyond athletic abilities. And when you have a great leader at the forefront, all those other things, the team culture and dynamics, all fall into place. But I feel like when a coaching staff values their athletes, can have those conversations, appreciate them for everything that they give to the team, that's when athletes want to buy in to those coaches. That's when athletes want to perform for those coaches and perform for each other. And everything else kind of just falls into place when you have that real good head leader as a coach.
I'm curious what you would say to, like, what is the most challenging part of being a gymnast? Physically, yes, it's hard, but then also there's like so much pressure and there's expectations and there's a million things you could list off. What do you feel for you was the most challenging part of being a gymnast?
The expectations were probably one of the hardest. I think making lineups, we have a very unique sport in which you have to compete every day. I mean, not saying that softball, football, soccer players don't have to compete and perform at practice in order to make starting lineups. But I feel like when it comes to gymnastics, you're competing head to head with your teammates mm-hmm. for that position in such a unique way every single day that makes such an interesting dynamic. That competition part was so mm-hmm. hard for me, that setting those expectations and having to feel as though I have to meet those expectations every single day at practice, because that transition from club to college, in the sense of it's everything was just you related, you really only had to focus on you, to now throwing in that team dynamic and competing with each other to make those lineups, because you want to make those lineups because you've been an all-around gymnast your entire life. What do you mean you're now not competing beam. Mm-hmm. Like that's such a hard pill to swallow and to comprehend and to understand, but know that it's for your team because now you're winning team championships. And I feel like that those meeting those expectations and understanding that was definitely one of the most difficult parts.
Mm-hmm. What about for like life post gymnastics? Is there anything like, whether it's in relationships and your job, where you look back and you're like, I'm struggling with this, and you can attribute it to your gymnastics career? Like I would imagine like pressure and like being kind of like a perfectionist, I would imagine that that would be a big thing for a gymnast or any athlete. But from your perspective, I guess, is there anything that you look back on and you're like, gymnastics, you ruined me?
I mean, type A personality and taking everything personal. I feel like we take a lot of critiques always. And I feel like people critique me and I take it super personal all the time. And my dad always has to remind me, like, feedback is always good feedback. Like, it's always constructive, does not mean that it's like a dig at your personality or who you are as a person. Like, it's just feedback to grow. So I feel like that's always a daily reminder of like, just because they told me, you know, I need to do this differently or whatever, it's not, I'm absolutely failing at life and I'm a horrible person. So definitely like meeting those expectations of feeling I have to be perfect and not taking things too personal has definitely been a challenge. And I think also, you know, body image has definitely been a challenge. I'm not working out 40 hours a week like I used to. Finding ways to stay active, you know, I'm a very active person and I love working out, but knowing that my body ultimately is going to change. I'm becoming a woman and I'm post gymnastics and I'm not demanding so much for my body, and just understanding those changes have definitely been way harder than I expected it to be.
And I'm sure that's something that like every gymnast in some way, they struggle with that as well, whether they're still in the sport or out of the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that one is not talked about as much, to be honest.
Oh, and that's why I'm so glad you said it, because it's absolutely not talked about enough.
Yeah, it's really challenging. It's really hard. And just knowing like, okay, yeah, a pair of pants that I wore at 21, of course, I'm not going to stay that size for forever.
You can be like a physical person like you are. Mm-hmm. Your body is still going to change regardless. It doesn't matter how physical you are. Your body is going to change because you're not training the same amount of hours and at the same intensity that you have been for 20 years, I guess, however many years of your life.
Exactly.
Like you, it is bound to change, especially as you get older.
I was going to say, and you're just getting older. Like, we're not little girls anymore. We're women, and things grow and
it happens.
It is, what it is, and it happens.
Yeah. What about the best part, like the best perk of being a student athlete? Like, what was the one thing that you guys got or you got to do that you're like, hell yeah, this is awesome?
One of the things I didn't realize was so nice is, you're going to laugh, free food.
Oh, no, that's so valid. Yeah.
Like free food and free resources. Like grocery shopping is expensive.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel like
my fridge is empty right now, but
no, literally. And it's funny because me and my coworker still were like, oh, there's like going to be lunch provided. Yeah, we'll eat that. Like, you know, or we'll bring home some for dinner, or like, it's just, it's expensive. Living is expensive. So I feel like that was one of the best perks, and also being able to travel and see so many different places.
Yeah.
Not on my dime.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds so nice. That's one thing that I am definitely jealous of. I wish I would have been a college athlete.
No, I mean, the gear is so fun. Love that. Great perk.
Do you keep all the gear, or do you eventually have to get rid of some of it?
I do have all of it, but a lot of it's in storage right now, actually, like in boxes to preserve it. Cause I'm a sentimental person, low key a hoarder, and like can't give things up. Like, I have literal like thank you cards and like happy birthday cards from like freshman year of college. Like, I cannot give it up.
I'm the same way. Every time someone gives me a birthday card, I literally have in my closet up on my shelf. I just store it in there. And like, why am I holding on to this? Like, I don't know, maybe I'll need it someday.
But I'm like, maybe someday when they're gone, like, I'll want to like look back.
I agree. I am literally the same person. So it's all in storage right now. A lot of the Utah stuff that I got last year, I still wear because I work for the athletic department. So it's been super useful. I have a few things from Michigan, obviously, here, but
you probably have so much though. Four years
of gear, like a full wardrobe.
Speaking of perks of being a student athlete, we have a couple NIL related questions. Utah is, I feel like, one of the top schools in terms of NIL. And like, if someone is really interested in the whole NIL world, Utah is like kind of one of the schools that they consider. When you were transferring, was that a thought in your mind at all? Or did you not really care about NIL stuff? Some people do, some people don't.
I feel like it's hard for me because I only had it my 2 of my 5 years.
Yeah.
And I was not even on my forefront.
Yeah.
At all, to be honest. Cool perk, yes. Did I really engage with it beyond it coming to me? No.
You didn't like
a lot of resources. No. Yeah. There was, I was through my thesis, if I could find my phone, wherever it went. I don't know. One of the admin there that worked closely with, you know, as an NIL support system, did like a whole project or research on it. And it was like 5% of athletes are really actively seeking NIL opportunities, like out in the market, like want to do it. They're focused on it. And it was like 50% of athletes, or like over 50% of athletes, engage with NIL when it comes to them. But they're like, when it comes to my lap, awesome, sure, yeah, I'll do it. Am I actively going out and doing something about it? Not really. And then there's like the chunk that's like, I don't really care for it. I'm here for other reasons.
Yeah.
Outside of that. So I felt like that was like a super cool visual for me of understanding NIL. It's crazy to me. I mean, it's super amazing and cool, but I could not imagine being 17 years old and going to a school and wondering how much money I could make from it. Like, it is just not in my brain capacity.
It is totally a thing now. And it was not a thing.
Absolutely.
You were going through that process. Like, that is a very new change, obviously. We're hearing athletes that, like, there was one athlete that we know that was making like $13,000 per Instagram post, a single post. But is that normal?
So I feel like that's a kind of a misconception. There's only a small percent that make an immense amount of money through NIL. That's not to say that not every athlete has an opportunity to go make that amount. And this is funny. This is literally all my project is about, is when it comes to people, these businesses, they want to understand the perceived market value of what you give back to them. And so depending on what your perceived market value is to them, that's what they're going to give back. Who's to say what that market value is? There is no metric for it.
I was going to say, is it based off of like your followers and how people engage with your content?
It literally, there is no measurement. And so that's kind of where NIL is at crossroads of, you know, how are we measuring it? How are we measuring Caitlin Clark versus Abby Brenner from Utah? How are we measuring, you know, a quarterback, Cam Rising versus Miley O'Keefe?
Mm-hmm.
Is it butts in seats and how many people are coming to watch them? Is it social media following? Is it wins and losses? Like, what is that actual measurement and what are companies looking for? And it's seeming like the trend is different between male and female. Male seems to be more performance-based, whether their teams are winning and losing and how good of a performer they are at their respective role. Female-based seems to be how marketable they are in the sense of social media following.
Probably appearance, everything.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is not too surprising, I feel like. You say, the first that I've heard that, but I'm like, that tracks. That makes sense.
It makes sense, whether that's right or wrong.
Right.
There is no answer to that, you know? It's all opinion-based. And I think an important notice is that, like, the NCAA has a very general ruling, but each state has their own legislation.
Yeah.
So what's happening in Louisiana might be completely different than what's happening in Utah, and the University of Utah has no control over what LSU gets to do because it's state legislation. There's just a lot of complexities when it comes to NIL, and I feel like there needs to be more education on it, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm really interested in just like how you calculate someone's worth. Like, how do you know what to pay somebody? Oh, okay, so for you, and I'm not necessarily asking you to say like how much you made, but like from the deals that you got, were those just companies coming at you and saying, like, you're going to post this on Instagram and we're going to pay you this much money? Or did you, like, come up with, like, a price for yourself? Can you, like, counter it and be like, I want this?
Yep, absolutely. So for me, I did all mine majority through the collective. And so they set the price. They were like, Who Rocks House was like, hey, so-and-so is going to pay all of you blank, $500 a month for whatever. And those are the only monetization that I engaged with. Mm-hmm. Brands that would come to me personally, it was all like trade deals. So yeah. You post, you'll get free products type thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Could I counter it? Absolutely. And that's why a lot of athletes have like these agents now, I guess, representatives. Agents are kind of like a null word. You're not really supposed to say it at NIL. But,
oh, I still say agents.
I mean,
good to know, I guess.
Yeah, there's just strict policy in NCAA of like not wanting to be like professional with like agents.
Okay, that makes sense. But, I was going to say like why, but
that makes sense. Yeah. And so that's why a lot of athletes engage, and they're like, they help with that, you know, spokesperson interaction between business and the athlete. So the athlete doesn't have to do that, but the athlete most definitely can, if they don't want to have a representative, because that representative is going to take a cut of whatever they're going to make.
So is that how that works? Like, if you have a representative, are you paying that person like beforehand, like a flat rate of some sort, or are they just taking, if you get deals and when you get deals, are they just taking a cut of it and that's how they're paid?
My experience and my knowledge is that they're just taking a cut of it. And that's how they're paying themselves. I don't know if that's actually legal for, I don't know, to be honest.
It might not be, to be fair. I was just asking.
Yeah, like, I actually don't know. But to my knowledge is that, yeah, they just take a cut. And not all athletes understand that. There's policy legislation talking about, you know, bring NIL in-house. So right now NIL is completely out of the walls of the university, which means no Title IX, no athletic department involvement. Like it is completely separate. It's a private entity.
Right.
Which is very scary in administrators' minds of like not really being able to have a pulse on what their athletes are engaging with. And that's mm-hmm. scary. There's a lot of talk about bringing it in-house for those reasons of like, do athletes know what contracts they're signing? Can we help and engage with that and be that spokesperson instead of having these agents and, you know, doing more of that communicating and making sure that, you know, eligibility is not at harm when doing all this, because an athlete can sign something and not realize that they are in violation of NCAA, and that can cause an eligibility all across the board in academics and sports.
Ooh, that's a mess.
Yeah. Or they don't realize that they needed to keep thousands of dollars because they were going to be taxed at the end of the year, and now they don't have that money.
Oh, shit. It all. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So having those like educational and those resources for athletes, I mean, we're dealing with 18 to 20 year old males and females. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what taxes were. Like, I didn't know until last year when I got NIL money and Tom was like, you guys need to make sure you do your taxes.
How would you know? This is such a new concept. It's not like your parents are going to know, or even like a former coach. You know what I mean? Like, it's just such new territory for everybody. So like,
yeah,
how would you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Wow. And so that's been like a huge conversation piece of whether, I think some schools, don't quote me on this, are already adapting that depending on state legislation.
Interesting. Yeah, we could do a whole podcast about NIL stuff. I know, people
I'm all about it right now.
People are going to be messaging us like, ask Brenner this about NIL. I can already see it.
Hey, I'm here for it.
You're the NIL girly.
I got a thesis. We're on like 30 pages right now. So,
all right, read it to us. You're like, yeah, you don't want that. Okay, we're going to wrap this up with some feel-good questions. First one is, proudest moment of your career. What do you look back? And you can share multiple if you have multiple, like you're not confined to just one moment.
I'm proudest of who I've become from it all. Coming into it, I feel like I was so wrapped into the accolades and what all that was going to be. And I think I'm most proud coming out and realizing how incredible the experience was, all the different lessons I've learned and skills that I have that are so applicable to life after gymnastics. I think I'm just so proud of who I've become, how I've handled so many adversities and situations, and how I've grown and become stronger for it. And then obviously the national championship.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, come on, you got to say it. Don't make me say it.
And the Pac-12 championship. I think, you know, it was so cool to win the national championship. I mean, top memory.
Every college gymnast dreams of doing that. And yeah. Very few actually do. I was going to say that. Like, very few people actually can say, unless you go to
a college,
that you leave with a national title. Because then you leave with multiple. But for you to say that you're a national champion and that you helped win the first national title, like, you are so goated for that for the rest of your life.
Thank you. And then I think, like, second to that was, like, winning, you know, a conference title as an individual was something that was super unique and special. And then my junior year, I won the sportsmanship award for all of Big Ten. And so I feel like that also was just a really cool award for me.
You've done it all. Mm-hmm. You winning, well, at Pac-12s is my favorite thing. Because it feels like, when I say random, I don't mean that in like an offensive way. Obviously, you know that.
No, I know. Like, I mean, like, Jordan Chiles, Jade Carey, like Shea Campbell. Like,
it's a very competitive field.
Jaden Rucker. Like, it is like, yeah, Selena Harris. I don't know.
Abby Brenner to the top. Straight to the top.
It does help that it was our last event, and I'm pretty sure it was like UCLA's first. So.
But you drilled it. It was one of the best vaults I'd ever seen you do.
It was, yeah.
So you deserved it.
Good day to have a good day. I'll say that. Yes.
Last question. I feel like you kind of just touched on this, but maybe you can give a more like specific lesson or takeaway. When you look back at your career, is there like one or maybe two lessons that you have taken away from your gymnastics career that you're applying into your life now? I almost said your real life. And I'm like, well, I mean, I guess gymnastics was your real life too, but.
I guess it was your real life. My alternate life. That's a great question. I feel like, oh, speaking of, I didn't even talk about resume buildup because I feel like that's so important, which is the amount of transferable skills that sports give to athletes. I feel like I said, everyone thinks about, you know, the physical, tangible awards and accolades that athletes get, but there are so many intangible skills that are so applicable to life. When I was building my resume, I remember the MAC Center, which is our career center at Michigan, was like, you are able to perform at high pressure situations. You're able to meet deadlines. You're able to work with a team. You're able to have team cohesive goals and individual goals. Like, all these things are so transferable to real life and working, a working life, corporate life, no matter what that may be, whether it's lawyer, medicine, opening up a restaurant, whatever that may be. There's so many valuable skills that I feel like people forget from being an athlete.
Yeah.
Like, that is like the most important thing, in my opinion, is yes, it's super cool to be a winning, super high experienced athlete, but at the same time, all athletes have these such immense skills. Yeah. Skill sets coming out of college athletics.
And those are the things that ultimately impact your life. Like, you're always going to remember winning the national title and like XYZ, all of these things. But like at the end of the day, it's like what you took away from that experience and how you can apply that to your life now.
Yeah. And how it shaped you as a person.
Yeah. How it shaped you as a person, the kind of friend that you were, the kind of teammate that you were, the kind of leader that you were. Those are the things that people are going to remember about you. And then you're also going to be able to take things away from and apply it to your life now.
Yeah. I remember going into Pac-12s last year. I was having a conversation with Carly Dockendorf about this literal same thing. We were 1-2 with UCLA. It was anyone's day. It could have gone anyway, you know? And we were all just so high stressed in the gym about it. And I remember having a conversation with Carly and she was saying like, no one's going to remember whether you got a 995 at Pac-12s or you fell and cost the meet. Like, no one is going to remember that. They're going to remember the teammate that you were, the leader that you were. She was like, when I was a gymnast, I can remember the teammate I went to when I was having a bad day. I can remember the teammate that was always so bubbly and happy. I can remember the teammate that had the best advice. She was like, those are the things people remember of your time on a gymnastics team. And so you guys nailed it when you said that. That's exactly it.
Truly. I feel that. I feel that for you and for every athlete. Like, there is so much more that you bring to the table, but that also that you can take from your experience. At the end of the day, like, the fans are going to remember, like, I'm going to remember all of your accomplishments. That's like not what really matters at the end of the day. It's like the relationships that you've built and it's the ways that you've impacted people. And yeah. So I feel like that's a great way to end this.
I agree.
Is there anything that you want to add that we didn't touch on? I feel like we covered a lot in this.
We did cover a lot.
I'm an open book. You know, I love to be a resource for other athletes. And I guess
that's why I wanted to do this with you, because I knew that you would be open and I knew that you would be able to, I don't know, I knew that you would have good things to say.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, this is my PSA, like any athlete out there, gymnast or not, if you have questions or just need a resource, I'm so happy to help. That is like one of my favorite things about being a teammate, was like the mentoring side and just being a resource for someone. So anyone, if you guys have anyone that approaches you or they want to come straight to me, DM, email, I'm there.
Hit her up. Well, thank you so much for doing
this. No, thank you guys.
I enjoyed it. And I think that it'll be helpful to a lot of athletes. I hope it will be. And then just interesting for fans as well. I feel like you shed a light on a lot of things.
That does it for this week's episode. We hope you all enjoyed it. And of course, we have to say thank you so much, Brenner, for taking the time to not only come on the show, but for being such an open book and being willing to be a resource for other athletes who may currently be or someday go through some of the things that you've been through or experience some of the things that you've experienced. You are such a valuable resource to the gymnastics community, and we love you so much.
We also want to say thank you to our Patreon supporters. We love you guys so much, and you helped make this show possible. Sending you all a virtual hug. Thank you. Next week, we'll be back with another episode recapping the NCAA championships. Super, super excited to watch. I don't know how we're already at the end of season. I feel like we say this a lot, but season just went by really fast.
It feels like we were just at NCAAs last year.
Truly. We look forward to breaking down all the action with you all next week. We hope you enjoy watching championships, and we'll talk to you real soon. Bye.
Bye.